They stopped burying people in Manhattan a century ago because they ran out of room, didn't they? She said. They were moving down a narrow alley with high stone walls on either side.
The Bone City has been here longer than that.
The carriage came to a shuddering halt. Clary jumped as Jace stretched his arm out, but he was only reaching past her to open the door on her side. His arm was lightly muscled and downed with golden hairs fine as pollen. You don't get a choice, do you? She asked. About being a shadow hunter? You can't just opt out.
Not easily, or without risk, he said.
The door swung open, letting in a blast of muggy air. The carriage had drawn to a stop on a wide square of green grass surrounded by mossy marble walls.
But if I had a choice, this is still what I'd choose.
Why? She asked. He raised an eyebrow, which made Clary instantly jealous. She'd always wanted to be able to do that.
Because, he said, it's what I'm good at.
He jumped down from the carriage. Clary slid to the edge of her seat, dangling her legs. It was a long drop to the cobblestones. She jumped. The impact stung her feet, but she didn't fall. She swung around in triumph to find Jace watching her.
I would have helped you down, he said.
She blinked. It's okay. You didn't have to. He glanced behind him. Brother Jeremiah was descending from his perch behind the horses in a silent fall of robes. He cast no shadow on the sun-baked grass.
Come,
he said. He glided away from the carriage and the comforting lights of Second Avenue, moving toward the dark center of the garden. It was clear that he expected them to follow. The grass was dry and crackling underfoot, the marble walls to either side smooth and pearly. There were names carved into the stone of the walls, names and dates. It took Clary a moment to realize that they were grave markers. A chill scraped up her spine. Where were the bodies? In the walls? Buried upright as if they'd been walled in alive? She had forgotten to look where she was going. When she collided with something unmistakably alive, she yelped out loud. It was Jace.
Don't screech like that. You'll wake the dead.
She frowned at him. Why are we stopping? He pointed at Brother Jeremiah, who had come to a halt in front of a statue just slightly taller than he was, its base overgrown with moss. The statue was of an angel. The marble of the statue was so smooth it was almost translucent. The face of the angel was fierce and beautiful and sad. In long white hands, the angel held a cup, its rim studded with marble jewels. Something about the statue tickled Clary's memory with an uneasy familiarity. There was a date inscribed on the base, 1234, and words inscribed around it. Nephilim, Faculus Dickensis Awareni. Is that meant to be the mortal cup? She asked. Jace nodded.
And that's the motto of the Nephilim, the shadow hunters there on the base.
What does it mean? Jace's grin was a white flash in the darkness.
It means shadow hunters, looking better in black than the widows of our enemies since 1234.
Jace.
It means, said Jeremiah, the descent into hell is easy.
Nice and cheery, said Clary. But a shiver passed over her skin despite the heat.
It's the brother's little joke, having that here, said Jace. You'll see.
She looked at Brother Jeremiah. He had drawn a steely, faintly glowing, from some inner pocket of his robe, and with the tip, he traced the pattern of a rune on the statue's base. The mouth of the stone angel suddenly gaped wide in a silent scream, and a yawning black hole opened in the grassy turf at Jeremiah's feet. It looked like an open grave. Slowly, Clary approached the edge of it and peered inside. A set of granite steps led down into the hole, their edges worn soft by years of use. Torches were set along the steps at intervals, flaring hot green and icy blue. The bottom of the stairs was lost in darkness. Jace took the stairs with the ease of someone who finds a situation familiar, if not exactly comfortable. Halfway to the first torch, he paused and looked up at her.
Come on, he said impatiently.
Clary had barely set her foot on the first step when she felt her arm caught in a cold grip. She looked up in astonishment. Brother Jeremiah was holding her wrist, his icy white fingers digging into the skin. She could see the bony gleam of his scarred face beneath the edge of his cowl.
Do not fear, said his voice inside her head. It would take more than a single human cry to wake these dead.
When he released her arm, she skittered down the stairs after Jace, her heart pounding against her ribs. He was waiting for her at the foot of the steps. He'd taken one of the green burning torches out of its bracket and was holding it at eye level. It lent a pale green cast to his skin.
You all right?
She nodded, not trusting herself to speak. The stairs ended in a shallow landing. Ahead of them stretched a tunnel, long and black, ridged with the curling roots of trees. A faint bluish light was visible at the tunnel's end.
It's so dark, she said lamely.
You want me to hold your hand?
Clary put both her hands behind her back like a small child. Don't talk down to me.
Well, I could hardly talk up to you. You're too short.
Jace glanced past her, the torch showering sparks as he moved.
No need to stand on ceremony, Brother Jeremiah, he drawled. Lead on, we'll be right behind you.
Clary jumped. She still wasn't used to the archivist's silent comings and goings. He moved noiselessly from where he had been standing behind her and headed into the tunnel. After a moment, she followed, knocking Jace's outstretched hand aside as she went. Clary's first sight of the Silent City was of row upon row of tall marble arches that rose overhead, disappearing into the distance like the orderly rows of trees in an orchard. The marble itself was a pure ashy ivory, hard and polished looking, inset in places with narrow strips of onyx, jasper, and jade. As they moved away from the tunnel and toward the forest of arches, Clary saw that the floor was inscribed with the same runes that sometimes decorated Jace's skin with lines and whorls and swirling patterns. As the three of them passed through the first arch, something large and white loomed up on her left side, like an iceberg off the bow of the Titanic. It was a block of white stone, smooth and square, with a sort of door inset into the front. It reminded her of a child-sized playhouse, almost but not quite big enough for her to stand up inside.
It's a mausoleum, said Jace, directing a flash of torchlight at it.
Clary could see that a rune was carved into the door, which was sealed shut with bolts of iron.
A tomb. We bury our dead here.
All your dead? She said, half wanting to ask him if his father was buried here, but he had already moved ahead, out of earshot. She hurried after him, not wanting to be alone with Brother Jeremiah in this spooky place. I thought you said this was a library.
There are many levels to the Silent City, interjected Jeremiah, and not all the dead are buried here. There is another ossuary in Idris, of course, much larger, but on this level are the mausoleums and the place of burning.
The place of burning?
Those who die in battle are burned, their ashes used to make the marble arches that you see here. The blood and bone of demon slayers is itself a powerful protection against evil. Even in death, the clave serves the cause.
How exhausting, Clary thought, to fight all your life and then be expected to continue that fight even when your life was over. At the edges of her vision, she could see the square white vaults rising on either side of her in orderly rows of tombs, each door locked from the outside. She understood now why this was called the Silent City. Its only inhabitants were the mute brothers and the dead they so zealously guarded. They had reached another staircase leading down into more twilight. Jace thrust the torch ahead of him, streaking the walls with shadows.
We're going to the second level, where the archives and the council rooms are, he said, as if to reassure her.
Where are the living quarters? Clary asked, partly to be polite, partly out of a real curiosity. Where do the brothers sleep?
Sleep?
The silent word hung in the darkness between them. Jace laughed, and the flame of the torch he held flickered.
You had to ask.
At the foot of the stairs was another tunnel, which widened out at the end into a square pavilion, each corner of which was marked by a spire of carved bone. Torches burned in long onyx holders against the sides of the square, and the air smelled of ashes and smoke. In the center of the pavilion was a long table of black basalt veined in white. Behind the table, against the dark wall, hung an enormous silver sword, point down, its hilt carved in the shape of outspread wings. Seated at the table was a row of silent brothers, each wrapped and cowled in the same parchment-colored robes as Jeremiah. Jeremiah wasted no time.
We have arrived, Clarissa, stand before the council.
Clary glanced at Jace, but he was blinking, clearly confused. Brother Jeremiah must have spoken only inside her head. She looked at the table, at the long row of silent figures muffled in their heavy robes. Alternating squares made up the pavilion floor, golden bronze and a darker red. Just in front of the table was a larger square, made of white marble and embossed with a parabolic design of silver stars. Clary stepped into the center of the black square as if she were stepping in front of a firing squad. She raised her head. All right, she said. Now what? The brothers made a sound then, a sound that raised the hairs up all along Clary's neck and the backs of her arms. It was a sound like a sigh or a groan. In unison, they raised their hands and pushed their cowls back, burying their scarred faces in the pits of their empty eyes. Though she had seen Brother Jeremiah's uncovered face already, Clary's stomach knotted. It was like looking at a row of skeletons, like one of those medieval woodcuts where the dead walked and talked and danced on the piled bodies of the living. Their stitched mouths seemed to grin at her.
"The council greets you, Clarissa Frey," she heard,
and it was not just one silent voice inside her head, but a dozen. Some low and rough, some smooth and monotone, but all were demanding, insistent, pushing at the fragile barriers around her mind. "Stop," she said, and to her astonishment, her voice came out firm and strong. The din inside her mind ceased as suddenly as a record that had stopped spinning. "You can go inside my head," she said, "but only when I'm ready."
"If you do not want our help, there is no need for this. You are the one who asked for our assistance after all."
"You want to know what's in my mind, just like I do," she said. "That doesn't mean you can't be careful about it." The brother who sat in the center seat templed his thin white fingers beneath his chin.
"It is an interesting puzzle, admittedly," he said,
and the voice inside her mind was dry and neutral.
"But there is no need for the use of force if you do not resist."
She gritted her teeth. She wanted to resist them, wanted to pry those intrusive voices out of her head, to stand by and allow such a violation of her most intimate, personal self. But there was every chance that had already happened, she reminded herself. This was nothing more than the excavation of a past crime, the theft of her memory. If it worked, what had been taken from her would be restored. She closed her eyes. "Go ahead," she said. The first contact came as a whisper inside her head, delicate as the brush of a falling leaf.
"State your name for the council."
"Clarissa Frey." The first voice was joined by others.
"Who are you?"
"I'm Clary. My mother is Jocelyn Frey. I live at 807 Berkeley Place in Brooklyn. I am 15 years old. My father's name was..." Her mind seemed to snap in on itself, like a rubber band, and she reeled soundlessly into a whirlwind of images cast against the inside of her closed eyelids. Her mother was hurrying her down a night-black street between piles of heaped and dirty snow. Then a lowering sky, gray and leaden, rows of black trees stripped bare. An empty square cut into the earth, a plain coffin lowered into it. Ashes to ashes. Jocelyn wrapped in her patchwork quilt, tears spilling down her cheeks, quickly closing a box and shoving it under a cushion as Clary came into the room. She saw the initials on the box again, J.C. The images came faster now, like the pages of one of those books where the drawings seemed to move when you flip them. Clary stood on top of a flight of stairs, looking down a narrow corridor, and there was Luke again, his green duffel bag at his feet. Jocelyn stood in front of him, shaking her head.
"Why now, Lucian? I thought you were dead."
Clary blinked. Luke looked different, almost a stranger. Bearded, his hair long and tangled, and branches came down to block her view. She was in the park again, and green fairies, tiny as toothpicks, buzzed among the red flowers. She reached for one in delight, and her mother swung her up into her arms with a cry of terror. Then it was winter on the black street again, and they were hurrying, huddled under an umbrella, Jocelyn half-pushing and half-dragging Clary between the looming banks of snow. A granite doorway loomed up out of the falling whiteness. There were words carved above the door. The Magnificent. Then she was standing inside an entryway that smelled of iron and melting snow. Her fingers were numb with cold. A hand under her chin directed her to look up, and she saw a row of words scrawled along the wall. Two words leaped out at her, burning into her eyes. Magnus Bane. A sudden pain lanced through her right arm. She shrieked as the images fell away and she spun upward, breaking the surface of consciousness like a diver breaking up through a wave. There was something cold pressed against her cheek. She pried her eyes open and saw silver stars. She blinked twice before she realized that she was lying on the marble floor, her knees curled up to her chest. When she moved, hot pain shot up her arm. She sat up gingerly. The skin over her left elbow was split and bleeding. She must have landed on it when she fell. There was blood on her shirt. She looked around, disoriented, and saw Jace looking at her, unmoving but very tense around the mouth. Magnus Bane. The words meant something, but what? Before she could ask the question aloud, Brother Jeremiah interrupted her.
"The block inside your mind is stronger than we had anticipated," he said. "It can be safely undone only by the one who put it there. For us to remove it would be to kill you."
She scrambled to her feet, cradling her injured arm. "But I don't know who put it there. If I knew that, I wouldn't have come here."
"The answer to that is woven into the thread of your thoughts," said Brother Jeremiah. "In your waking dream, you saw it written."
"Magnus Bane? But that's not even a name."
"It is enough."
Brother Jeremiah got to his feet. As if this were a signal, the rest of the brothers rose alongside him. They inclined their heads toward Jace, a gesture of silent acknowledgement, before they filed away among the pillars and were gone. Only Brother Jeremiah remained. He watched impassively as Jace hurried over to Clary.
"Is your arm all right? Let me see," he demanded, seizing her wrist.
"Ouch! It's fine! Don't do that, you're making it worse," Clary said, trying to pull away.
"You bled on the speaking stars," he said.
Clary looked and saw that he was right. There was a smear of her blood on the white and silver marble.
"I bet there's a law somewhere about that."
He turned her arm over, more gently than she would have thought he was capable of. He caught his lower lip between his teeth and whistled. She glanced down and saw that a glove of blood covered her lower arm from the elbow to the wrist. The arm was throbbing, stiff, and painful. "Is this when you start tearing strips off your t-shirt to bind up my wound?" she joked. She hated the sight of blood, especially her own.
"If you wanted me to rip my clothes off, you should have just asked."
He dug into his pocket and brought out his steely.
"It would have been a lot less painful."
Remembering the stinging sensation when the steely had touched her wrist, she braced herself, but all she felt as the glowing instrument glided lightly over her injury was a faint warmth.
"There," he said, straightening up.
Clary flexed her arm in wonder. Though the blood was still there, the wound was gone, as were the pain and stiffness.
"And next time you're planning to injure yourself to get my attention, just remember that a little sweet talk works wonders."
Clary felt her mouth twitch into a smile. "I'll keep that in mind," she said. And as he turned away, she added, "And thanks." He slid the steely into his back pocket without turning to look at her, but she thought she saw a certain gratification in the set of his shoulders.
"Brother Jeremiah," he said, rubbing his hands together, "you've been very quiet all this time. Surely you have some thoughts you'd like to share?"
"I am charged with leading you from the Silent City, and that is all," said the archivist.
Clary wondered if she were imagining it, or if there was actually a faintly affronted tone to his voice.
"We could always show ourselves out," Jay suggested hopefully. "I'm sure I remember the way."
"The marvels of the Silent City are not for the eyes of the uninitiated," said Jeremiah.
And he turned his back on them with a soundless swish of robes.
"This way."
When they emerged into the open, Clary took deep breaths of the thick morning air, relishing the city stench of smog, dirt, and humanity. Jace looked around thoughtfully.
"It's going to rain," he said.
He was right, Clary thought, looking up at the iron-gray sky. Are we taking a carriage back to the Institute? Jace looked from Brother Jeremiah, still as a statue, to the carriage, looming like a black shadow in the archway that led to